Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBerry here, and we are back again. It's the month of August in the year 2026, and I am joined by my fellow Flame On compatriots. Starting on the East Coast, we've got Eric.
Hello.
And then now, for at least the foreseeable future, on the West Coast, or at least Pacific time zone, we've got BJ.
Help me.
How long are you hunting bugs for? 6 months?
So pretty much, yeah, where they have opened, for those of you listening, they have opened the one of the cattle crossings. We are currently inspecting for new screwworm, and they have us doing that till they have their permanent handlers in place who have just been hired, but there are no dogs for them, so we will possibly be here through January.
Oh my God.
At least we don't need the cows right now, because we're going to be eating horse for a while.
Jesus. I mean, unless that made it on the recall list along with everything else right now.
I mean, it's either wild horse or Argentinian beef that was too toxic for China to take. So we get it.
Oh, no, we have a recall on that now.
Oh, fun.
Girl, we have a recall on everything at this point.
Salmon. What else? Lettuce. Good God, there's so many
ice
things.
Pops that have glass ice in them.
Oh, yeah.
Ice pops that have glass.
Frozen shrimp that has radioactive isotopes in it.
That's old news. That was like 6 months ago.
Yeah, but it's still popping positive for it.
Well, I mean, yeah. Do we think that they fixed the problem? No, but at this point, what the we have blueberries recently.
Yeah, I forgot about blueberries.
Yeah.
Did we ever fix the lettuce? Or is that still giving everybody diarrhea?
Still giving everybody diarrhea.
Eric, with this administration, do you think anything is fixed?
Just the elections.
No, they are not. They just keep claiming
that. That hurts my heart. And is hilarious, too.
Good grief. Well, finishing out the introductions, also on the West Coast, reporting from a new location, we've got Brian.
It's my fault. I derailed us, and it wasn't even about the weather, which, by the way, today in Seattle, it is 86 degrees. Way too hot, except my new house does have air conditioning, and it is glorious.
Now I can visit you. Yay.
No, you can't. Give me about 6 months. No, I the house that you thank God we're not on video, because my setup right now is very impromptu. I could barely find the microphone. It was in a box, in another box. Yeah, it's nuts. I do not like moving. It's the worst.
But yeah, that is new tough. AC. Yeah. But good. Maddie, I'm sure, is very happy that there is air conditioning.
Oh, my God. So our bulldog, Madeline, at the old house, there was no AC. And so if it got this hot, she would be flat out on the floor. Thankfully, it was like a laminate. She would be like panting. If she did anything exerting, she was like, I'm done. Just stick a fork in me. Here, at least, she like isn't panting. She's still like, you know, she still like slides down on the floor because it's nice and cool. But oh my God, she is much, much happier now, I think.
She takes after her father. I very much do not like to be exerting any energy when it is hot outside.
She is a Florida girl and loves her AC.
I am not a Florida girl, but I do love my AC. The children took after their father, for one thing. Very much do not want to be in the hot weather. Although they will lay in the... I don't know if Maddie still does it, but Havoc loves laying in his sun puddles.
Yeah, she does occasionally. Will, like, if she's outside, she'll lay on a... Well, when I had a deck, no deck at this place, she did lay out on the deck occasionally. So yeah, sometimes she'll just want to have a random sun thing, but no, not for very long.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that she's getting a little bit of cooler air during these hot days in Seattle, because I know that is not very common for you all out there.
It's getting more and more common, and I do not appreciate it. I came out here for one at least one reason, and it's to get away from the heat. It's
trying to burn with me. Burn
the
with
rain,
me.
The rain is why you went to Seattle.
No, I mean, burn with one, me. At least one reason.
I mean, now that's why I want to go to Seattle, is for the rain.
Now they're literally setting fire to the rain.
Oh, no. It wouldn't shock me with everything going on. Tomorrow's hellscape.
That's the next thing that happens. We have fire rain coming down. Great. Good times. I mean, considering that would probably be the next sign of the apocalypse, considering we just lost our patron saint of big titties and spending a lot of money to look cheap today. So to give everybody a glimpse behind the curtain of when we're recording this, Dolly Parton passed today. The announcement made by her nephew via video earlier this afternoon on all forms of social media, YouTube, all of that. I happen to be taking a momentary rest from work and open up Facebook, and that was the video that popped up. And I watched it for a minute and had to go back because I was like, wait a minute. Did he just say what I think he said? And then was immediately very sad. And What's up?
I got to tell everybody at a restaurant we were having lunch at today, because my coworker told me, and then I went, I definitely gave the gay gasp, and the waitress was like, "Is everything okay?" And I'm like, "No, but it's Dolly Parton died," and then the entire restaurant like, "Ah!" I'm like, "Oh, I was the bearer of that bad news. How wonderful!"
I'm just imagining it like a sitcom where the entire restaurant just erupts into. To tears. It would be appropriate, though. Dolly had that impact.
Yeah, and it's interesting. NPR was talking about it a lot on my long commute home now. And Dolly is one of those entertainers that actually like unifies 99% of the country, whether you're conservative or you're liberal or you're anywhere in between, on the extremes, you know, whatever. Very few people had much negative to say about her. So it is sad because we don't have a whole lot of people like that anymore. And like in that she appealed to everyone, she didn't pander, I would say, to conservatives that much. Maybe earlier in her career when she did gospel or something, but she overall didn't pander, but I think she was way more an ally to queer communities and marginalized communities. She's done so much philanthropy I wasn't even all aware of. Like, it's kind of amazing to have somebody like that, and then now they're gone. So it's a loss.
Yeah, fuck them fascists. They don't get to mourn her for all the shit that they idealize that she was completely against. So no, you're absolutely right.
They don't get to claim her at all.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No.
But yeah, many may love her, but fuck you. You don't get to claim her. But no, I put it in my work chat when I, like, you know, shortly after I found out, after I messaged you all. First thing that I did was message this group chat and be like, "Hey, Dolly passed." But one of my colleagues, their child gets a book every month from the Imagination Workshop. The nonprofit. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's so sweet. But it's insane how many lives that have been touched by Dolly's generosity. And if we can only be a fraction of as good of a person as she is, it would make the world a much better place. So big loss to humanity with Dolly's passing today at 80 years old. But this has been common knowledge for a while. I did not know about it. I guess I don't watch what happens live. But I didn't know that Dolly had a part in producing Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That was through her Sand Dollar Productions company. So it's amazing the things that Dolly did during her life and career. So phenomenal. We will miss Dolly, but her philanthropy and kind spirit lives on well after she's gone. So, yeah. On that somber note, let's start talking about the month in pop culture. So we are all back together. I was walking the other day and I was thinking back to the last microsode we recorded and how we couldn't remember what we had talked about in the previous microsode. And then I looked it up, BJ, as we did not do during our recording, and was like, oh, that's what we did. Is Daredevil Born Again. That was the microsode that we did. I was like, I knew it couldn't have been that long from the last time we did a microsode, but it took me a minute, and then I was like, oh, that's right. Because I remember liking the season much more than Brian did. And then, I was like, okay, that's why I blocked it out, because I was the lone dissenting voice on having a much stronger opinion of Born Again season 2 than others on the episode.
I couldn't even remember what you were talking about for a second. I was like, wait, what did we not like? What did we like? I literally, everything is a wash. Everything is just a blur right now.
And this I'm amazed time, you were drunk while doing the recording. Oh.
No,
this isn't Luke Cage.
Oh my God. That's epic. I gotta go back and find that audio.
God, that was a fun day.
It just can't get any better. I think on fond memories of that season more than this. I hated parts of it, but honestly, you liked it. No, you didn't. You liked it. I didn't.
I liked honestly. It.
Yeah, yes, I think I liked it. I think I liked it more than I remembered at the time. But again, that's like just I forgot the bad stuff. And just kind of went, yeah, it was kind of cool. So,
yeah, there you go. You know, I'm excited for when season 3 rolls around. I'm excited for...
No, I am too.
I'm excited for... And we'll probably talk about this more, some of the stuff that BJ will bring up, but maybe this can segue into it, but Vision Quest. Like...
Oh!
I am enthralled by what this is going to be, and... They have each been their own little world, and I know that it's the, you know, the quote-unquote trilogy, WandaVision, Agatha All Along, and Vision Quest, and it feels like it's been so long since we were told about Vision Quest for it to finally be coming around, and for us to get it in, what, less than 2 months? For to finally get a trailer, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm okay with having waited this long. And now watch it be... a shit show. But
I don't think I mean James Spader will rescue just about anything.
True,
he has great moments in the trailer, but where was that trailer that you mentioned that we all saw? Where was that
speaking of? Yes, BJ, why don't you roll into what you're going to chat about, and we'll start with this and we'll move forward with there.
Well, so it's so funny because when I was thinking about stuff that I'd been paying attention to and watching, this left my brain completely because it was around August 14th, I believe, and that would be the D23 Expo, which is essentially Disney's Comic-Con, where they show off all their projects for like the next couple years, parks, TV, movie, and video game. So this year's was kind of insane. I'm just going to kind of go through a couple of the things, starting with Vision Quest. We got a full trailer for Vision Quest. We also got a full trailer for... sorry, I had everything organized and then I moved away. We have a full trailer for Ahsoka Season 2. They actually showed a trailer for Scrubs Season 2. Actually, I'm very excited for that. I just finished the Revival Season 1. We got a Percy Jackson and the Olympians Season 3 trailer. And then we've got some soft... I want to say they're trailers. We got some soft trailers. Pixar's next film in 2028, Ghost Street, which is kind of like a found footage supernatural like ghost movie. We got a Lilo and Stitch 2, Princess Diaries 3, Coco 2, Incredibles 3, Star Wars Starfighter. We did not get a trailer for Star Wars Starfighter. We did get a partial trailer for Zootopia 3. We got another Doomsday trailer. And we got a partial trailer for the Bluey movie. We got a partial trailer for Frozen 3. I believe a new trailer for Hexed. And
live action Tangled. Oh my God.
Live action Tangled, which the I think the main oh that's right that was a trailer. I completely forgot.
One of the ones, and I don't remember because I don't think I saw this on YouTube. That one, and I think Starfighter did have a teaser, but they have not been released to the public. They were just in the hall.
Yeah, they were just in the hall. And then just for there's so much park news, I'm not even going to go into all of it, but I am going to go. The Villains Land was officially announced with the three hosts of the Villains Land will be I believe that's Maleficent, Dr. Facilier, and Cruella DeVille will be
Who's
the three.
Dr. Facilier?
He's the main villain that's from Princess and the Frog.
Oh, I should probably watch that at some point.
You've never seen it?
I don't think I have. Evidently, I haven't. Because I don't know who's that. I know. Can we go back a second? Oh, okay. Can we go back? We've kind of rattled this all off. We haven't reacted. So, Ahsoka. Let's just talk about that for a second. For all you Star Wars fans, of which I am, and BJ. Funny enough, memories on Facebook that remind us of when we used to have fun times out in the world.
Right. Yeah.
We went to Galaxy's Edge. BJ took me there. It was very lovely, and I got a lightsaber that I just moved and is in good condition still, and I'm very happy, though I think I lost the case. Whatever. It was cheap.
Protective case.
Yeah, I think it was garbage. I mean, the lightsaber's great, but that case, Disney, that was an afterthought, let's be honest. Anyway, point is, Ahsoka trailer was amazing. I knew they had to come back to some of the stories that they set up, which is essentially Rebels reunion, Heir to the Empire, the adaptation with
Thrawn.
Zahn wrote the books. Thrawn, thank you. Ron's Zahn.
Thrawn.
More Anakin than I ever would have expected Disney to do. That was a surprise. Like, you know, flashbacks and Force Ghost. And they've already done a little bit of that. Both, but I mean, Hayden Christensen getting to redeem his Anakin is like who would have thought, right? I guess he wants to do, and I mean, I don't think this will happen, but he wants to do a live action Clone Wars with like Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman, and I'm like, I'm never going to say no. Stuff's not going to happen, but
no, please, can we just leave the Clone Wars behind? Done with it.
Clone Wars, I started in and I need to finish it. It is a solid, I mean, the canon extensions that they did, the work, all the story beats, like it redeems some of the prequels. And in many ways, it's just a great, so if you haven't seen it, you should definitely go watch it. But yeah,
it's great as is. It doesn't need to be converted to action.
Yeah.
need to be brought back in any way, shape, or form. I'm ready to leave that era of the timeline.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ahsoka, I'm very excited about that. Doomsday, obviously a big, because there was already a trailer that came out with San Diego. I think D23, they had a live like panel thing, but I think they had like a new trailer that revealed some stuff. I don't remember. Maybe that was, yeah.
They had a trailer and a featurette thing.
That's it.
Yeah. I think they, I don't know if they announced this before D23, but then there's in-game Encore, which supposedly is supposed to link to Doomsday. Some scenes are supposed to link to Doomsday.
Four extra minutes. So,
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And then,
hold on. Did you not mention the big thing that you mentioned during our Brand New Day recording, which came out the day of D23, where we talked about a certain cast being most likely announced at D23?
Well, I hadn't gotten to the announcements yet. Because
all right.
Hurry
it up. Let's get to something I can talk about. Although, so I want to say, wait, real quick. I want to say that the Doomsday trailer that we got, that extra, you know, whatever, minute and a half. Oh, my God. So excited. I know that the last time we got a trailer, some of y'all were a little like, hemming and hawing. I'm still fucking down. I'm excited for this movie.
I'm more excited now with that extra footage because it cements Doom. At least there's a lot of theories going on out there. I don't want to say anything. Who knows? But at least one of the Dooms is a relation. He is part of the Fantastic Four story. I was really getting a weird vibe and just not loving that we haven't had him with the Fantastic Four, and the fact that they had those beats about it, it really just made it fit my continuity brain way better. I think that material really helps. What do we think that extra 4 minutes is? I know a lot of speculation is out there about stuff with Loki and or Steve Rogers or something, but I don't know. What are we thinking there?
I think it's the remember when old Steve appears to talk to Sam, and he's like, you want to tell? He talks about how he went back, met up with Peggy, and he's just like, do you want to tell me about any of that life? And he's like, no, I don't think I do. And I think that was an older version of Steve having lived through the events of Doomsday. And somehow he made it back because he didn't come back to their timeline through the means that they had created. So I think this is the version of Steve Rogers that lived through Doomsday, that he's happy to see everybody, but at the same time, he can't really tell them all the bullshit that's about to befall them. So I think that's what it is.
My theory is more along the lines of something with the way they had to pull off that. The heist, it's alluded to that it probably is partly what destroyed Doom's family or something.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So it's very straightforward, I think, to sort of put in scenes that depict like this is the first of the incursions that happened after they got back and did all the stuff. I mean, after Steve, I guess. I mean, Steve tried to obviously put stuff back, but I think the implication there is that what he tried to do, or the original inciting thing, it caused this destruction to start, and it's all going to tie in. But who knows? I mean, that's just, you know, maybe.
I think they're all just going to be in a Russian bath together talking about potatoes. That's the 4 minutes. Nothing else.
Yelena talking about how she doesn't like the size of, she likes the size of those potatoes.
Exactly. Exactly. That's my wild speculation and conjecture. All right. So keep going, BJ. What else we got from D23?
All right. We got an announcement for this was an announcement, not a trailer, but Incredibles 3. So I'm a little bit excited about that because I always like the Incredibles movie. We got an announcement for the new Simpsons movie. And then we got a wonderful announcement that I think is great. I don't know how you all feel about it, but we got a wonderful announcement of the announcement of the current cast of the new X-Men movie. Woo! So we've got Sadie, spoiler alert for, I guess, Spider-Man Brand New Day. We got Sadie Sink as Jean Grey, Kit Connor as Scott Summers, Samara Weaving as Emma Frost, Christopher Abbott as Professor X, and Maya Boyd as Storm. Indy, now I love this. I'm not going to lie, I love this casting. Indy Navarrete as Rogue, and Adam Driver as Mr. Sinister.
Unbelievable. That was like mind blown. So excited.
Some people have been weird about it, but honestly, Adam Driver as Mr. Sinister, especially if he can be just a little bit sassy, is absolutely perfect casting.
I don't think I have to do sassy Sinister. I really want there to be sassy Sinister, but I don't see it with him.
Not that sassy. I mean, just a little bit. He's not going to be, I doubt he's going to be like Krakoa levels of sassy.
He needs the cape. He needs the cape and maybe an allusion to that ref, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I think unfortunately, as much as the Krakoa era is peak X-Men in my book, for most of the Hickman stuff, at least I don't see him doing that yet.
So no, I'll give my opinion.
That's we deserve though.
It is. Oh, it is.
Oh yeah.
Super gay.
I have more faith that X-Men 97 might circle around to that somehow than I do that the Marvel stuff is. Oh, I mean, I'm saying more. I trust because they're already...
That's zero at this point. If Bo DeMeo had stayed on, we probably would have gotten...
I don't know. I think he definitely would have done it, but I still think it's possible. But I don't know. Maybe.
We'll see.
We'll talk about that in the future.
Yeah. That's a future episode conversation.
But no, as far as the cast goes, in my opinion, I'm completely on board with everybody. I'm once again, some media IP has turned a character I've never considered attractive in my life. And somehow I'm wondering what the makeup's going to look like, but I swear to God, if I get another attractive Professor Xavier, I'm going to fucking lose my mind. I don't think I've really paid attention to Christopher Abbott as an actor before, and which is great, but also I'm like, that man is cute as hell. And I'm like, I don't need to be like, we've gotten hot Magneto. So, and moderately attractive Professor Xavier. I don't need hot Professor Xavier. And a potentially hot Magneto as well. I'm good. But
hot Professor X and hot Magneto, and they're going to go on hot adventures together.
See,
for their hot times.
They can't keep getting away with this. That's exactly what you can't keep fucking getting away with this and not have them married. I demand they be married. But yeah, no. What do you guys think of the cast?
I'm fine with it.
I think it all sounds good. I don't know the actor who's playing Professor X, but it seems he doesn't seem much older than the rest of the cast. So I wonder how that whole professor teaching new mutants how to use their powers is going to work if there's not really a generation in between.
I mean, there are teachers. I was taught by a teacher that was the same age as me.
I mean, they did this in First Class a little bit because the age difference in that incarnation was way closer than the one, even though they prematurely balded McAvoy, X-Men. But I mean, so I don't know. I can live with it. It's just not, I mean, I guess they'll eventually get him in the chair, but I'm guessing he doesn't start in the chair. I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see. Actress that plays this playing Rogue. And I know we're going to talk about this here in a bit. Teasers, I think. I'm really excited about her as an actress after seeing Obsession.
Well, if we want to dance around sassy gay sinister, we could just have Charles walking around in a black leotard at all times with a helmet on his head.
Yeah.
Again, Krakoa era, Hickman's. I don't know what Hickman was going through when he wrote all that, but damn, fan service for us, I swear.
And it'll be interesting because I heard a rumor that they were that there's talk that Captain Marvel is going to get a new film and Rogue is going to play a part in it.
Uh-oh.
So we might get that Rogue.
Well, I was just about to bring that up, versus
the Fox movies versions of Rogue, where she doesn't have any real abilities other than just the
side.
I did not like
how the movies portrayed it.
No, like that was a shitty version of Rogue, and I love Rogue, and that was horrible. But there's a lot of talk that she's going to be an antagonist in this film, and you know, whatever that, you know, if we're gonna go back to Brotherhood days and Mystique's, you know, influence over her, whether or not Mystique is in this film or not, there's apparently more cast coming. But to see Rogue in an antagonistic role, and she doesn't need to join the X-Men right away. Let her be a part of this film. Let her be a part of Ms. Marvel or Captain Marvel. Although it's such a weird thing. She was Ms. Marvel, and it was a whole convoluted way of how she got her Kree powers unlocked because of Rogue. And then there was the whole Binary thing, and then we had Binary in the Marvels post-credit scene with that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting, but I'm excited to see what they do with these new cast of X-Men characters, and maybe they'll do right by some of the ones that didn't get the best treatment in either of the Fox sets of X-Men movies.
Yeah. I'm excited. So we've got the cast announcement, X-Men, and then the thing that I've been waiting for. I know none of you have, but we got a full trailer and an announcement of the worlds, one of the worlds for Kingdom Hearts 4. They'll be doing a Cocoa World, which looks fucking gorgeous. And then they also announced that they are finally doing a Kingdom Hearts anime series.
That was huge. Like I really, because I've played the Kingdom Hearts games, but honestly, if I tried to even begin to explain the story, I think I've tried on this show before. Maybe, I don't know. It's just a disaster of a story. Like,
oh, we should have a microsode where I explain it to you.
Oh my god, I need drink. I need alcohol for that. But that'd be okay. So new show idea. You know how they do drunk history? I think we should do drunk game canon. Someone's done this. Someone has to have done this. But drunk gaming history, like explaining the lore or the story of a game. And Eric, you and I get to do Final Fantasy 14.
Absolutely.
I want that so bad. We got to do that. Anyway, point is, they did have a trailer before that they showed there. Like he's in like, you know, current modern Tokyo, wherever. And people are like, oh, it's the hero, Big Hero 6. It's whatever, whatever. I'm like, I don't, maybe. I didn't think so either, but the people are all, you know, whatever. But
this Big Hero 6, but I don't think that was what was being represented.
That's what I think they were trying to fit it to something that they could like, you know. But yeah, clearly seeing this gorgeous rendering of Coco, which I also still need to see. Eric, the list is long. I have not seen Spider-Man. That is just another sin that I will admit to. I want to see it.
What do you do on airplanes? Because you're not watching movies, apparently.
Okay. There's a whole treatise I could get into about watching movies on a plane, and it's not what you think.
God.
I'm not going to go there. I will just say it has nothing to do with the aspect ratio and more to do with my own inability to manage anxiety. Okay, so just take that as you will. Long story short, it looked gorgeous. Like, the only comments I've heard though that were like negative is they're like, Ovis doesn't look at all like Sora. And I'm like, I guess, I don't know. He's got the spiky hair. It looks like Sora to me, whatever.
I'll do a little bit of lore drop on you right now, is that Sora effectively is dead, and the area he's in is effectively what happens to Keyblade wielders when they die. So,
okay. I mean, they so kind of implied kind of that afterlife. In the story. Yeah. I mean, like, so what? Like, they'd have the James Wood knockoff, the Hades. Oh, he's
it's
not
James
here.
I mean, Wood.
Oh, it's they still have him doing the voice?
They have still most performing. Of the original voice actors still doing the voices in the games.
Kind of thought he'd have been canceled, but I guess not. Oh, well. He should be.
They were very quiet about keeping him on Kingdom Hearts.
He's got some views. Okay, well, that's interesting. Now, is Haley Joel Osment still doing the American? I thought there was some churn. Maybe it was the Japanese voice changed. I don't know.
I think the Japanese voice actor for Sora changed, but it's still him doing doing Sora. Impressive. And I want to do him.
Well,
now the dead people he sees is himself.
Oh no!
Oof. Yeah,
but
not him himself. You know,
sure.
Those were just a handful of things that I figured we all might be into. There is some park information, but. That is all available online for those of you that are Disney park goers. A lot of good, cool stuff coming to the parks all over the world, not just in the Americas. And with that, I believe, that's almost everything. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure none of y'all watch the Ice Age movies anymore because there's yet another Ice Age movie coming out. So I think we're good.
Ray Romano needs to make a paycheck somewhere. That's that. And thus concludes our D23 microsode. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Whenever there is a big convention announcement thing, it's always like, all right, let's dedicate a good 30, 40 minutes to BJ going through and filling us in on the things that we may have missed. This time... I actually knew a little bit more, I guess, because there's so much Marvel on this one and new rock stars was there. So Eric Voss was reporting from D23 and like the TVA setup that they had there and all of these different things. So this was a D23 I actually heard more about as it was going on than many of the other ones. But all right. Appreciate you filling us in and keeping us informed, BJ. Eric, since we mentioned this, or Brian mentioned this earlier, let's swing it on over to you for your topic.
Yeah, one of the... it's been a big year for big movies, but one of the smaller movies, which did cause quite a splash this year, has been Obsession, which is an American supernatural horror film written, directed, and edited by Curry Barker. It follows Bear, played by Michael Johnston, a music store employee who buys a supernatural toy that grants his wish for his friend Nikki, played by Indy Navarette, to fall in love with him, which makes her become obsessed. This was kind of a smaller movie, which just blew up through word of mouth and excellent reviews by the critics. And just a stellar performance by Indy Navarette, kind of getting her name out there to the wider public. It is quite thrilling in just the first kind of three quarters of it. It's just an uncomfortable feeling and then just ramps up at the end in the gore. Of it all. I thought it was fantastic. It definitely looks like more than just the $1 million budget that they made it for, and has grossed $500 million in the box office. It's still ranked as the 10th highest grossing movie of the year so far. So has anybody else seen Obsession?
I saw it. well after the Obsession had ended. I think I watched it when it came out on streaming.
I was the same. I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it at home.
I don't think that's a movie you have to see in the theaters, though I'm sure a lot did. I'm actually glad. And here's the thing. So I was watching Red Letter Media, which is one of my favorite YouTube, you know, whatever studios. They do a lot of reviews. They do some other hijinks. Anyway, they reviewed it, and they reviewed it, I think, alongside Backrooms. I saw Backrooms in the theater, and I was kind of annoyed because there were a lot of young people there. And I am of a certain age now where that annoys me. And it's not that they're young. It's that they won't shut the fuck up. And then they keep getting up and leaving and coming and going and all that. So I'm the old guy there. But similarly, Obsession seems to have been very popular with the Gen Z and Alpha, I guess. I don't know. The youngins. And so I was like, hell no, I'm not seeing that in the theater. And also, I just needed somebody to take the Mickey out of it a bit for me. And thankfully the Red Letter Media guys kind of compared the two, and they were like, yeah, you know, both are very interesting in their own ways. Both have like these young filmmakers being empowered by studios, which is great. Backrooms is a bigger studio effort, but Obsession, very minimal budget, very effective use of it. I mean, I will say I did enjoy that part of it, but I'm glad I waited, and I'm glad I didn't see it in the theater, and I'm glad my expectations were lowered because I actually enjoyed it. Especially again, knowing all the backstory and stuff, and the actress, what was her name who played the girlfriend?
Indy Navarrete.
I think the best part of that movie, everybody else does a great job, but the best part of that movie is seeing her play this character who is like inside a version of herself, so that you see like both the sort of so basically, I mean, long story short, it's this girl, you know, becomes forced to love this guy, and seeing that relationship devolve, seeing that obsession that's artificial take over her, and still seeing those moments where she sort of snaps out of it and you can see through. And then the ending where everything kind of comes to light and things go sideways. It was powerful. Like, she deserves to be in anything. It makes sense why she'd be a very interesting rogue, because she could play the crazy that Rogue has been through and come out the other side. So, yeah, I think of all the things about that movie, that I think that her role in it and her acting in it, it's disturbing and it's amazing. The rest of it, I don't know. That's fine.
I saw it, and it was, honestly, for me, it was just, I love it when something relatively unknown kind of becomes known. My thing, though, is, let's be honest, A24 is A24 movie, right? I'm not crazy.
It's distributed by A24, I believe. I don't think they... Produced.
They didn't make it, but they just so the thing about them,
Blum got in.
Oh, Blumhouse.
So
Blumhouse, the thing is, we've seen this formula before many, many times. We've seen it in comedic films, we've seen it in horror movies, we've seen it where the wish goes horribly wrong, that whole be careful what you wish for sort of thing. The cool thing is that this is very visceral. This was honestly, at some points, it was a very shockingly visceral movie. And the thing I love about it is that Bear is the bad guy. He is absolutely the bad guy. Like, he may not understand why he's the bad guy, but he is 1,000,000% the bad guy, because people go through this all the time. People in the gay community, straight, I don't know who you are. Everybody has wished somebody would like them or love them. It's happened. At some point, it sucks, but like just the you got what you want in spades, like, and like just in the pretty much most terrible way possible, and how it can just ruin people's lives. It was just so beautifully visceral, and I it was just a triumph for like like the horror movies in general, because honestly, Backrooms was a little bit weird because like it was a payoff for a lot of people who understand the full lore, but it just wasn't, the way it was done wasn't really my cup of tea, but I love liminal space horror. So I always, and I love movies where like somebody makes like wishes for something and it goes completely fucking tits up. Wishmaster. If any of you have never seen Wishmaster, absolutely watch Wishmaster. It's the campiest, goriest like horror movie ever, but it's Robert Englund's in it. But no, I really did like Obsession a lot. It was, and the whole cast, all I loved everybody.
Yeah, one of the things I really liked, and which I hope doesn't beget a string of sequels about it, is that they never fully explain, like they don't go into too much depth. They never solve what the One Wish Willow is or where it gets its power or anything like that. It's just kind of a thing. And also, Bear as a character, it's like he never gives himself a chance to actually be rejected by Nikki.
Yeah.
Like we never will know if he had just told Nikki he liked him, if she would have gone out with him on a date.
He's very representative of the incel culture, and I don't know if that was like an intentional thing they were building, but like he's like the incels that like complain and rage and freak out that women are going to reject them, that people are more attractive, that they can never stand a chance, and then but they never take their shot. You know, like I saw in it.
Yeah.
No, 1,000%. It's he was fucking lazy. It's laziness. Like if you like somebody, being afraid of them rejecting you means you don't like them. That's what that means. It means you're so afraid of them and about how they react. You're viewing them as an antagonist. You're not viewing them as somebody like you actually like, you would like to get to know, you care about. So instead of him figuring out his own feelings, he took a shortcut. Now, the downside is the shortcut worked and all of a sudden you're getting everything you want and then it goes tits up. And I just, oh, I love it. I love it so much.
And just that final turning of the knife when near the climax, when he's actually talking to real Nikki and he's like, well, what would be so bad about being with me? Like, and he fully knows that she's not in a good place and he's not going to do anything to actually help her, even though he knows it's not really her. It's just that's when I fully saw him as the villain of the movie.
Oh yeah. He slowly evolves into that villain. Like, there are numerous choices he makes that are like that next step a little too far, that next step a little too far, where you're seeing that layers, this peel away, because they play it pretty sympathetic for like maybe the first half. Like, little things you're like, you're lazy, you're whatever. But then, they build on it and they build on it. Like the first time he has sex with her, I think that's when I was like, oh, yeah, you're totally the villain. This is not happening to you. You are the perpetrator, and obviously he had made the wish, but you are bringing this onto yourself, that you have committed the sin and doubled down on it. So yeah, by the end, you're right. He's horrible. I mean, bad shit happens to him too. He gets his comeuppance many times over, but like he deserved it. The other people in his life, that's collateral damage, which is also pretty horrible. He earned it.
Yeah, Ian, I had very little sympathy for him. I felt really bad for Sarah.
Oh, yeah.
That was horrible. And ultimately, for the real Nikki, she comes out the mm-hmm. worst in the situation. Almost the worst, because she's the only one who doesn't die and has to live with everything. Yeah. But it's great. I hope they never do a sequel. I hope they just let it be. And he goes on to a completely different original project.
I did see a lot of people asked, like, wanting to make this entire concept like a series. So you have like there was one somebody had come up with where it's the same idea, but it's a mother, a very controlling mother who wishes her daughter was like the perfect daughter. Like a whole like wish fulfillment sort of series with the One Wish Willow.
I don't know. I think there's interesting stories that could be told, but I think it's going to be kind of diminishing returns each time you go back to it.
Yeah, you can't overdo it.
Because it's kind of going to be like a Pet Sematary situation. And how could you... I mean, obviously there's ways to tell that story, but... I don't know. This just felt very fresh in the way it was told. And I don't want it to... I kind of like the idea of it just being its own thing. Because then ultimately they'll put pieces in each one to bring it back to what's the new lore. We'll get extra lore about the company itself that's making the One Wish Willows, and they go down that path, I think.
But, I mean, come on, you gotta have capitalism in the movie, so why not? Unless it gets
the truest by... villain of all.
Well, I was saying, unless it's Wile E. Coyote versus Acme, or Coyote versus Acme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, since the three of you have seen the movie, what flame rating would you give Obsessed?
I would give it 4.5 flames. I think just a really well done movie.
Wow. I would say 3.5 for me.
Might have been higher if you watched it on a plane. BJ, what about you?
I'd say 4.5 out of 5.
All right. Very good. Very good. All right. Well, Brian, since you're not watching movies on a plane, what have you got for us this month?
So I just... last week, before I started really moving, got to watch Lanterns season or episode 1. And I have been anticipating the show for a long time, mostly because it's a great take. It looks really, you know, everyone says it's like True Detective meets superheroes, whatever. But it's got a pedigree that I really appreciate. It's got Damon Lindelof is involved, and he did, of course, Lost and Watchmen, which is another sort of take on, more of a gritty take on superheroes and all that. And one of my favorite comic book writers, Tom King, was very involved in it. So I was really excited about that pedigree. What's the Chandler? Is that the actor who plays Hal Jordan? Kyle Chandler?
Kyle Chandler. Yes.
I'm familiar with his work. I don't think I've seen him in a lot, because the shows he's in, I just don't watch. But I really thought he looked great as like a grizzled older Hal. And the actor who plays John Stewart, again, not as familiar with, but really, really think he's killing what he's done. I mean, again, first episode only. For those of you who do not know the story, it is basically Hal Jordan is training John Stewart to be his eventual replacement. So in this continuity right now, there's only one Green Lantern for Earth, which little asterisk next to it, because, of course, we also have Guy Gardner running around doing something, God knows what. But other than Hal is the Green Lantern, and John Stewart, for various reasons I think we're going to find out, is his replacement when that time comes. Now, what's cool about this is not only is it like I said, True Detective buddy procedural, they're investigating like murders that may have aliens, that definitely have aliens involved in a small town in like Nebraska. It ties into the Green Lantern lore. I think they've peppered little lore nuggets throughout. I heard season or episode two rather has another big lore chunk. Sinestro shows up, but it doesn't put Green Lantern up in space as much. It doesn't really go for the shenanigans that the movie did. The movie, of course, Ryan Reynolds out, you know, a while ago. So I think they were smart to try to reboot this without the space stuff and go back to sort of the Green Lanterns are cops, and the cops are trying to keep the peace and investigate murders and other criminal enterprises and whatever. And that's the thesis statement. I do also appreciate that Hal Jordan, as portrayed by, you know, Kyle Chandler, is a dick. Not everybody loves this, but honestly, I'm fine with it because Hal Jordan has been a dick in comics. So don't let anybody tell you otherwise. He's been a hero. And I think this guy, this incarnation is just kind of past that era, which sucks because I do really kind of want to see more of the heroic Hal Jordan. But what we're seeing is that kind of burning out mentor role. And John Stewart, who is another phenomenal Green Lantern and has an immense, kind of a complicated story too, as his upbringing is very military and he treats the Green Lantern approach, like the whole ring projections, very differently than Hal does. And anyway, they get to all of that. They show a little bit of all of that, which is straight out of the comics. So I'm really excited about what the rest of the season portends. They also are playing with time. So you get like the current era, which is like 2026, and that's like a flash forward, and you're getting like the main story is in 2016. So the interplay between what they reveal when is a great storytelling approach that works very well in the comics, and it works very well. I think TV is, I know different TV shows, of course, Lost being, you know, the most obvious example, plays with that as a tool to kind of offset and sort of contrast the different timelines. And so you'll have a reveal in the future, which the first episode has a huge reveal. I will not say it here because I think it is far better that you experience it. But it is universe shattering, let's just say. And then that's in the future, but like we're living in the present we're living in the past 2016 era to see how that all unfolds. So I loved it. Humor, great acting, a lot of character actors from all kinds of different programs that I've seen and other things. Garrett Dillahunt, one of my favorite actors. Was he on Raising Hope, I think? The dad?
Yeah.
And then Deadwood and some other great stuff. So, I mean, he's in it. He's great. I really loved it. Did anybody else watch it?
Yes.
I watched the first episode. It was pretty good.
It's great. I love Kyle Chandler. I've loved him since I originally saw him in Early Edition back in the 90s, and then on Friday Night Lights, where I think most people recognize him from.
Yep.
But I love this kind of grizzled, world-weary version of Hal Jordan. I love that they're going to kind of pepper in him talking about his origin, but I don't know how much they'll actually show us of it, which I'm fine with, because I think going forward, they're obviously working on passing the title and ring and everything onto John Stewart, and he'll probably be the main lantern going forward from this point in the DCU.
I mean, maybe not, because that's the thing is, right, I think Superman takes place in like 2025, 2026, and it's Guy Gardner. So, like, we don't know, because I do know eventually there's like two or three Green Lanterns on Earth, but we don't know where Guy Gardner got his ring. And right, in that flash forward at the end, the ring didn't, if he's dead, the ring didn't go to Jon Stewart. So that's the million-dollar question, is whose ring does Guy Gardner actually have right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a mystery that they will show Gardner. We know he's showing up at some point. But yeah, the ring's whereabouts at the end of the first episode is kind of an unknown for various reasons that you'll see. So yeah, I don't want to say too much more because it's pretty big.
I'm also fine with him not always wearing the suit.
Oh yeah.
Which,
yeah,
that's been a debated thing online where they're like, he's got to have the suit on at all times. And
Grant Morrison, who is one of my favorite writers of all time, I thoroughly disagree with him about his assessment on this, but it makes sense because his Green Lantern is one of his last comic projects was a Green Lantern book, and it was a beat cop in space, all the space shenanigans, and he always wore the uniform, and he was like down on both aspects not being it. Like, he wasn't disrespectful. I think he appreciated certain parts of it, but overall it was like not his thing. And I was like, no, that's fair. Green Lantern is more that, more the space stuff and the uniform than it is what we're seeing. But again, I think for adapting it and sort of bringing people into that world, you could go Guardians or you could do this. And I think this is better for the Green Lantern story because we've seen the Guardians version. We've seen the space cop version. We've seen all that. So yeah, it's definitely a contentious topic online among many people, how they feel about the style of the show.
Yeah. I'm also really liking Kelly MacDonald as the sheriff, Carrie Kane.
Oh yeah.
Which I saw the kind of out there theory that someone believes that because the last name is Kane, K-A-N-E, they think she's actually Batwoman.
I mean,
I thought you were going to say that they're related to Dean Kane.
No.
I was worried at that point.
Which I think that is just not.
We call that reaching.
She is.
Yeah.
She is from Gotham. I think the big thing about it is I think she's probably related to her. Like a relative or something. So, because Kane is like technically the cousin of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I doubt they'll ever get to the point where they're introducing Batwoman as a character with that whole story.
Having said that, the grandmother is pretty great, and I could totally see her being badass something or other. But that whole situation with the small town family. You know, word travels fast in a small town. Like, that is, there is so much that gives me Fargo vibes out of that. That's probably another reason I really like it, is it's giving that last season we had of Fargo with John Hamm and his compound. Like, ugh. Like, not in a sexy.
Yeah.
No.
That's not the C word I was going to expect you to say with John Hamm.
No. Well, and Garrett Dillahunt kind of plays the same role, and he's like he's not the matriarch. I don't know what he is. He's like the something. But no, it's not. It's so far not as sexy as the John Hamm cowboy cult, like, sheriff leader. If you've seen that Fargo season, like, he's a horrible character, but like, yes, very hot and, you know, yeah. Anyway, so I, it's giving a lot of different, tonal elements that I'm into. Glad y'all are into. Not everyone is into it. So what are you gonna do?
Well, Lanterns. Check it out on Max. Is that what we're at right now with the names?
That's where we're at.
For the moment, it is Max. All right. One last topic to discuss. I'm going to bring us to some music. So over the last, June, July, July, August, over the last 2 months, we have gotten the announcement of Carly Rae Jepsen's 8th studio album. The fact that it is a double album, called Day and Night that will be releasing on September 18th. So just a couple of weeks away from the release of the album. We've gotten four singles that have highlighted the launch of this new era, for lack of a better term. I hate the fact that we've used era so much in describing these different albums for different artists. I feel like that doesn't always apply. Like, I get that it's a new sales cycle for them. It's a new look. It's a new sound.
It's a new era.
It's a new era. I don't think that every artist with a new album deserves to call it a new era. Like, if there is a substantial change in your sound, look, and all that, okay, fine. But I don't know.
Do you not like it because Taylor Swift is used? Does she have an album called Era?
No, that was the Eras Tour. Ma'am.
Eras Tour, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yes. The record-shattering tour that lasted for forever. A two-year-long tour that I only got to go to once, and I'm still sad about that. I don't know. Sometimes it just feels like not every artist needs to dub their next album their era. Like Ariana Grande, there isn't a big change from album to album. Like, I don't think she uses it there, but like, that's not, I wouldn't consider that era changing. Carly Rae Jepsen, though, announced 24 tracks divided up into two different albums, Day and Night, where Day is going to be a little more raw, psychedelic pop, live instrumentation, where Night is going to be a little bit more sleek, synth-driven, dance pop and exploratory. And we got On Wires as the lead single and video on June 26th. After All was released as a single on July 16th, we got Don't Leave Me on the Dance Floor. I don't think it was a video for After All. Eric, correct me if I'm mistaken.
I don't think so. I only remember the videos for On Wires and Don't Leave Me on the Dance Floor so far.
Gotcha. Well, and then Motivation came out. So Don't Leave Me on the Dance Floor, August 7th. Motivation came out on August 21 with a video. So apparently After All is the only one that hasn't gotten a video out of the four singles that have been released so far. On Wires, I haven't really sat with all that much. After All, I am digging. I think those are both off of Day. And then Don't Leave Me on the Dance Floor has an interesting video, but that one kind of hit me the hardest from like a lyrics perspective. Like, I think that one is pretty deep and pretty emotional for kind of a dancey song. And then we got Motivation, which is the most recent. As of this recording, it's only a couple of days that we've had it. I watched the video on Saturday. Why was a Carly Rae Jepsen music video making me cry on a weekend? Like, what was going on with this? Because I'm going through some stuff right now, and I'm going to vague talk about this on the podcast and put it out for mass consumption, but there's stuff going on, and I get that I'm maybe a little more emotional. And then I listened to and I read along the lyrics on YouTube Music yesterday or the day before. I forget what it was. So it was after I watched the video. And the lyrics, I get it, like, and it's a good song. But the video depicts, not completely, obviously, because it kind of ends with, you know, the birth of her child with her husband and all that. So there is heterosexual love and family there, but there is a lot of queer representation and queer family. And whether that's romantic or chosen, there was so much just love in the video and so much queer love that I just was so moved by it that I was literally like, I not like sobbing like a baby necessarily, but I cried a bit while watching the video. And, you know, it was some, you know, I don't have the lyrics in front of me, but, you know, talking about loving her family, you know, we've got room for, you know, just there was such a feeling of hope and love in the video and in the song. And it just was, I was like, okay, this is why I keep coming back to Miss Jepsen here, because I didn't really get very into The Loneliest Time and The Loveliest Time, which were her last two releases that came out essentially, the Loveliest Time being the B-side to The Loneliest Time. But no matter what, there's always a reason to come back to Carly Rae Jepsen when she puts music out. To the point where when the album was announced, I hopped on the website and I pre-ordered a signed copy, or at least a signed insert that will come with my album. Because nowadays when you get a signed vinyl record, it's not actually like the jacket isn't signed. There's an insert that gets included. And then when you open it up, there's a little signed slip in there. So I'm super excited about that. Eric, I know that you were a little giddy when I said that, you know, this is what I was talking about. What are your thoughts on Day and Night, the announcement, the singles we've gotten so far?
Of the singles so far, I've only listened to the first three. I haven't listened to Motivation yet. But I will probably be a Night girly.
Same.
Like On Wires and After All, they're fine. But I really enjoyed Don't Leave Me on the Dance Floor. I have to listen to it and not watch the video because the video throws me off a little bit. But it reminds me a lot of Dancing on My Own, in that it's an upbeat song that's very danceable. But if you pay attention to the lyrics at all, it's a very, very sad story. And I like that a lot.
I like sad music I can dance to.
Exactly. So I'm looking forward for more of that stuff.
Yeah, we have 2 of 12 from Night, 2 of 12 from Day. I'm definitely with you on leaning towards Night being where I will probably gravitate more towards from a thematic perspective.
Yeah, because so far, Emotions is still my favorite of her albums. Or Emotion, rather.
Side A or Side B?
Side A. Plus, I also attached Cut to the Feeling to that album because it has nowhere else to go, really. And I just...
Well, it's on Side B, isn't it? It with
Emotion. Is it?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it is.
Because I thought it was just written for a movie and it was kind of never released on any of her albums. So I kind of just put it onto Emotion Side A.
I mean, honestly, I couldn't tell you any other songs I think that are on Emotion Side B.
Yeah.
But yeah, Emotion is a fantastic album. I'm still a dedicated girly. Like, overall, I think that's where I got back into her. Like, I got back to her with Cut to the Feeling.
Yeah.
But Dedicated was coming out right after that. And that was where I kind of got back in. And then I went back and listened to Emotion afterwards. And it's, yeah. It's both are really up there. I think I'm still Dedicated Side A. Because, again, yeah. Side B came out and I didn't really listen to it all that much.
Yeah, but I'm glad instead of kind of releasing one album and then releasing all the B-sides to it, I like this is going to be a double album because she just writes so much music and I'm glad to have her just give us all the music together instead of having to pick the quote-unquote 12 or 13 best songs and put those out together and then the rest of them. So
sure. No, I agree with you there. And apologies, I was wrong. Side B does not contain it. Cut to the Feeling, except the Japanese like bonus edition does have Cut to the Feeling on Emotion Side B. On the other piece to that, and I think it's because I saw her in concert, so I'm attached to these songs. Motion Side B has Store and Fever. And I do enjoy those too. And they were part of her dedicated tour, if I'm not mistaken.
Was that the one we went to?
Yeah. And that was a really good set list.
Yes.
I'm excited. I'm glad, to your point, 100%. I've talked about the shitification of music because of TikTok and 2 minute songs or 2.5 minute songs, and you put out a 12 track album and it's 30 minutes long, if that, sometimes. So to have the, you know, have full length albums and then to have a lot of these music companies, these labels capping because a CD can only fit 12 songs or 14 songs, you know, and everybody knows I'm a big Taylor Swift fan, but that was why, like, her early albums, why there were so many vault tracks that came out when she did the re-recordings, is because her record label was like, oh, this many songs or this much time fits on a CD, you can't go over it. So that's why you have, you know, so many vault tracks for Fearless or Speak Now and Red, because she wrote a lot of songs before that, you know, for that album, and then had to whittle it down. So yeah, and I mean, there may be more songs. I hope we don't get a Day and Night Side B album. I mean, granted, hey, another 48 songs or 24 songs for 48 total, maybe.
I mean, I'm never going to be upset for her giving us more music, but
right, she's keeping us fed. It's the job. But no, super excited about Day and Night. The other thing, and I'd be remiss if I don't bring this up, Mariah Carey pulled.
So odd already.
No, shut up. Leave her alone. So a couple of months ago, well, first off, she re-released or put out Daydream 30. So the 30th anniversary edition of Daydream, the different cover, more songs, live recordings, all of that. Phenomenal. Love it. Love that she's giving time to these anniversary editions. But a couple months ago, she pulled Glitter from streaming services. I was like, okay, odd.
Didn't say anything about it. The album.
The album. So the soundtrack, nowhere to be found. And then 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, she just put up a pink glittery wallpaper with a link to sign up for alerts. And it sent Mariah Carey fans on the internet a buzz with conjecture and speculation about what it meant. And just the other day, 2 days ago, what day are we? I don't even know what day it is anymore. Recently, might have even been yesterday. Honestly, time is a construct. But she announced that we are getting the 25th anniversary edition of Glitter. First time ever being pressed on vinyl. And it's going to be essentially a double album, digital only, that is going to have some new songs that I guess were written or recorded for the project that were never used. Some remixes, some reworkings of some of the songs that were originally there. And that's going to come out at the end of October. I think October 30th. Is when it's going to release, and it's sold out on her site in less than an hour, making it the first of her like anniversary editions to sell or move this many units. And I think, I forget what chart it's on, but maybe it's a vinyl sales, but she is blowing up the charts with this Glitter anniversary reissue. And by the excitement on your face, I see nobody wants to talk about 9/11. Please tell me y'all know what that's from.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, the Twin Towers.
I mean, not 9/11, but what that quote is from. So for those on this call and those listening who don't know, she was at a concert. I think it was in South America. It was like a World Aid concert. Like, it was a big charity concert. And she was out on stage performing. This is maybe 8-10 years ago. And after she did one of her songs, I believe one of the producers was in her earpiece wanting to talk about it. Because for those who don't know, Glitter, the album, was released on September 11th, 2001. So the 25th anniversary of 9/11 and the 25th anniversary of the Glitter album release are coming up in a couple of weeks. But they wanted her to talk about, like, 9/11 and that whole thing with it. So there is a video that floats around and gets pushed on, you know, Instagram every so often, of her standing on stage talking to the crowd and then going, well, I guess nobody wants to talk about 9/11, and moves on. And it is just the most out of left field comment, like the way that this video clip is. But I love it. I love it. I am sad because there were apparently signed copies that were for sale, but I saw the post about an hour into it and everything was sold out. She did restock, or maybe not restock, but put both the purple and the glittering pink vinyl on her Amazon store, because Mariah doesn't have a merch section of her website anymore. She just shills all of her stuff, including the really expensive Pride merchandise, through her Amazon shop. Love that about her. So I was able to score myself a copy of the glittering pink vinyl. So I'll be able to reminisce about 9/11 while listening to my glittering pink glitter vinyl at Halloween. Not on the 25th anniversary, but on the on the Halloween anniversary of it. So I know that everybody is excited for the Glitter soundtrack, which I will say this. I will die on this hill. Say what you want about the movie. Yes, corny. I still don't think it's that bad. There are definitely worse movies. Gigli, for one. But Glitter as a soundtrack, solid album. I will die on that hill. So if there are any Glitter lovers out there, the song, the album, not actual Glitter, but you too. I mean, I've been known to dabble. Let me know. Love to hear from you. So, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of this month in pop culture. We are going to most likely, 99% sure, our next episode will be coming out in a couple of weeks. We're going to do a microsode focusing on season 2 of X-Men 97, talking about the highs, the lows, wild conjecture for season 3, which season 3 and season 4 being committed to being same time next year and the year after, rather than there being a 2-year gap between season 1 and season 2. I feel like that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was.
Yeah, it was definitely a long time. I'm pretty sure it was about 2 years. But that should be coming up in a couple of weeks. And then after that, we will have our next roundup episode. So let us know what you have watched, partaken in, enjoyed. Let us know what you think we would enjoy or partaking in. And thank you, boys, for joining me on this call today. And until next time, Blimoff.
Bye.